This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Athos Syrianos joining me here in the studio. Welcome to the program. We've got plenty to get through because the Women's World Cup has started. The Matildas had their opening game. Unfortunately, they suffered a defeat to arch rivals Italy. We will dissect the whole thing, plus highlights from all of the other Women's World Cup games, including England, who narrowly edged Scotland, and a few others. Outside of that, we'll also touch on the UEFA Nations League in the final 15 minutes because that inaugural league has been wrapped up by none other than Cristiano Ronaldo's Portugal.
Yeah, he was well held by Virgil van Dijk. I thought it was a great matchup. As good as incentive as any to watch the Nations League final. It's not quite up there with the World Cups and the Euros, but that matchup alone was a good reason to watch it. Well, we can't beat around the bush too much. We have to talk about the Matildas, and it was an unfortunate result considering there was so much hype and optimism going into this game. Over 500,000 people are tuned into SBS to watch them kick off their World Cup campaign. We couldn't have asked for a better time, but unfortunately the result didn't quite go the way of Australia.
No, it didn't. And remember, you can get involved at any time. Give us a call on 03 9944 9999, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio, or comment below if you are joining us on Facebook Live. We want to hear what you think and what you thought of the Matildas game last night, because having last appeared at a World Cup 20 years ago, Italy made a memorable return as Juventus's star Barbara Bonasera scored twice, including a dramatic stoppage time winner to give the Azzurri a shock 2-1 win over the Matildas.
And the flag stays down. Bonasera. It's Barbara Bonasera. Can she keep going? Bonasera with the opening goal for Italy. The flag-o is up on the far side. Carpenter. Kerr goes down in the area. Penalty kick. Giuliani against Kerr. Sam Kerr gets her 32nd goal for Australia.
Sabatino is about to come on, incidentally, now for Italy, having looked as though she was going to be introduced for the start of this second half. All given away. Polkinghorne dispossessed. Great opportunity for Italy to equalise, and they have taken it. Barbara Bonasera with the equaliser. An error at the back. The experienced Australian defender is punished. Last passage of play, surely. Williams thought about coming for it, decided against it, and it's been turned in. Barbara Bonasera again. Australia punished.
With thanks to Optus Sport for those highlights, the Matildas going down narrowly to Italy 2-1 on the night in their opening Women's World Cup group game.
Unfortunate for the Matildas, quite heartbreaking as well to go down in the 95th minute to Italy once again. A bit of deja vu there. For Italy, though, it was a great weekend. Not only did they the men's storm home to a 3-0 victory over Greece, but their women opened their World Cup campaign in the best possible way. Now, the Italian women's national team has not advanced to the group stage of the Women's World Cup since 1991. So that was quite some time ago, to 28 years ago. So they're in a great position now with a win on the board. You'd think, given that four third-place teams can progress, that just one more draw will see them in the next round of the Women's World Cup.
And they have Jamaica as well. If they beat Jamaica, they're in prime position to advance out of this group.
Oh, if they beat Jamaica, they're well and truly through. You'd be very unlikely not to make it through with 6 points. And all of a sudden, 2 wins to start off your tournament, you've got a great coach in Milena Bertolini, who's won 6 Coach of the Years in domestically in Italy before getting the top job. And I thought she coached very well in that second half, and a lot of the win has to go down to her. And all of a sudden they're a team that you don't might not want to come up against as the tournament progresses, because if they do finish in the top two, and given how many third-ranked sides can go up, they'll be in a pretty good position to go pretty far in this tournament.
And Italy are known for their defence. I mean, if you're a coach of any Italy squad...
Oh, they teach you that from birth, how to defend.
Well, that's it. It's like, you know, the water that you drink every day. and on that note, Italy only conceded 4 goals in their qualifying to the FIFA Women's World Cup, which just shows how strong they are in defence. I would be fascinated to see this next game, Italy-Brazil, and how that goes.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a massive game. That'll be the final group game, and that could decide top spot in the group. So we wouldn't have thought that would be the case last week or a few months ago, but that's reality at the moment. The Matildas going down, probably the first upset of this World Cup. We are only 4 or 5 games in, and given it is a major tournament, there'll be plenty more to come. But the Matildas just had to be the first, didn't they?
Yes, they did. But one positive was that Sam Kerr scored her first FIFA World Cup goal, and this is what she had to say after the game.
Yeah, there is, and obviously that's the disappointing part. We could have put the game to bed within the first 45 minutes, but we didn't, and now we're in this situation, so we've got to bounce back, stick together, and look to Brazil. We're still really confident. We've played Brazil a lot lately, and it's, I guess, Italy was the unknown. Brazil we definitely know a lot about, so we're still so confident, and look, in 4 days' time after a win, this will all have been forgotten, so it's good. I've got to take our chances. I've got to put the game to bed early, and that's on us as forwards, and yeah, just got to take your chances at a World Cup, because they don't come around very often, and then things like that happen in the 95th minute. Oh, I mean, you know, it's obviously nice to score my first goal, but it's not about me, it's about winning the game, and obviously it's disappointing to lose, but hopefully the goals can start flowing, I can take my chances, and we can win the game on the weekend.
With thanks to Optus Sport, that is your captain, Sam Kerr, chatting there after the game. She was quite disappointed, as you heard. It's not good enough for the Matildas, because they were dominant all over the pitch, but they just couldn't convert the chances that they had. And I think going into this, we did say on the show that is one aspect at any major tournament, whether it be a FIFA World Cup or whatever else, that you need to be nailing down. Because in a World Cup, you don't get many chances on goal. So that's why you need to convert them when they are presented. And I think that's what the Matildas need to get better at. And it sounds funny to think that we are talking about the fact that the Matildas aren't scoring at the moment. They scored from a set piece, the penalty spot.
Yeah, technically, right? It's from open play, but from the spot, yeah.
We need to be scoring more goals from open play. The amount of crosses that, you know, were going into the box last night, and no one could get on the end of it. It's just not good enough. And the Matildas certainly need to improve if they want to get out of this group, let alone make a quarterfinal or a semifinal or even win the Women's World Cup.
Yeah, those crosses did come about, and it did get a bit predictable in the second half, but I think that's just due to Italy's transition in the second half. They moved from what was a 4-3-3 to a 4-4-2. They shifted a few things in defence, and they allowed their wide players to really frustrate Australia and really test our fullbacks coming in from behind. That's why they got caught offside 6, 7, 8 times. We'll get to that very shortly, however, but you are right. In these competitions, what separates the good teams from the mediocre teams, or the great teams from the good teams, is being able to finish chances. We say it every week when we discuss competitions like the Asian Champions League, and it's no more so different than in a World Cup. Considering how dominant the Matildas were in the first half, they probably should have gone in another goal ahead, but they just couldn't quite take their chances. I thought there was a lot of positivity after going into halftime. They created a lot of chances. The Matildas probably got going and got a lot more settled after Italy scored that offside goal. I think the Matildas started a bit shakily, which was a bit surprising considering the experience in the squad. But now that this is over and done with, I'm sure they'll head into that game against Brazil with, well, they know that they have to get a result. So I think it'll be a different approach heading into that one.
And I don't think this game against Brazil is going to be as straightforward as what everyone might think as well. Even though we do have the wood on Brazil at the moment, you know, it has been in our favour for the past couple of games. I think that you still cannot have any complacency coming up against this Brazil side.
Well, the
mindset's... reality is we need 3 points. Otherwise, we won't be getting out of the group.
Yeah, the mindset's very different. Many of us would have thought, and self included, we would have come into this Brazil game following a win against Italy. We could have tried maybe a few things against Brazil, but now the attention and the focus has shifted to, you know what, if we want to get out of this group, we really have to beat Brazil. And it's almost as though the Matildas have to make a statement. We'd love to hear your thoughts, 99944 99999 03 if you're outside Victoria, +61 if you're over in France and awake. I think it's about 8 a.m. over there and you are just coming to terms with the result from last night, or drop us a line on Facebook. Are the Matildas at a crossroads already? And that's the question we want to pose to everyone. I think they are to a degree, but then again, if you are going to have your worst performance, it's best to have that at the start. They know what they're up against now, the Matildas, and now they can shift their focus to probably one of their biggest games in quite some time, their biggest game since the Asian Cup final.
Well, there's a lot riding on this next
game. Thursday night, absolutely.
Yeah, that's it. There's a lot riding on this upcoming game, as you say, on Friday against Brazil. They really need to get these 3 points. Otherwise, we pretty much won't be going through this group. I think that Italy are coming up against Jamaica. That is pretty straightforward for Italy. But then again, you never know. World Cup games are always unpredictable at points. Maybe Jamaica might throw a spanner in the works. But I think after what we saw from Italy last night, it was pretty commendable. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say Italy are going to progress.
Well, they play to a good structure. They've got a coach who knows what she's doing. They obviously like to play to a plan, and that's what they did. And they'll come into the game against Jamaica as favourites. So, again, their mindset will be totally different. But given how well they've played in that second half against the Matildas, they'll certainly be buoyed. And then that Brazil game will be that massive test for them. If they can survive Brazil, then they'll be in a really good position to progress into the next round.
And so far, Group C, which is the Matildas group, looks like this. Brazil are at the top on 3 points, and they've also scored 3 goals. Italy are underneath them on second, also on 3 points, having scored 2 goals. And behind Italy is us, Australia, in third, Jamaica, fourth. And as I said, to come, Australia taking on Brazil, Jamaica taking on Italy. And then on the final match day, it'll be Jamaica, Australia, Italy, Brazil. What a matchup that'll be. But it's all very intriguing. And that's the beauty about a World Cup is it's not always as predictable. And one point I did make last night is that just because a country is ranked this or that, it does not mean anything. I don't really buy into FIFA rankings, and I think that you can't be naive enough to think that just because they might be a lower ranked nation than us, that we also take that as a bit of...
Yeah, that's right. But it is fair to say that Australia should have beaten Italy.
They should have, but they didn't. That's the reality. They didn't. And Australia played their final international friendly before this FIFA Women's World Cup against the Netherlands. They conceded 2 goals from set pieces. Now, they haven't rectified that issue. They haven't rectified it. And too many occasions, you mentioned that we saw a number of Italian players getting in behind the back four. That's another issue. They need to tighten up the defence because it's getting exposed too often. And when they come up against the big countries, the bigger country is going to be a lot smarter and put away even more chances than what we saw last night. So they have a lot of work to do heading into these next couple of games.
That's right. And result aside, if you were to look at the game on paper, you'd say Australia had a really good day out. 17 shots to 5, 57% of the ball, and 347 passes to 133. Now, on paper, that suggests that Australia smashed Italy. But Italy did what I think a lot of people feared would happen, in that they would really frustrate Australia. They'd defend very well. And it's an issue that the Matildas have had for quite some time now. Being the side that they are and having the quality that they do, you're going to come up against sides who are going to frustrate you. And that, I think that's one of the other things that we haven't really spoken about, and a tactic that maybe Brazil will try use too, and something the Matildas haven't quite learned to deal with. But one of the major criticisms from last night was playing out from the back and that high attacking line. Where do you sit on this debate?
Yeah, I feel like this high line is trending on Twitter at the moment.
It is. It was a massive talking point from last night. Also, to coincide with that, was the fact that Italy scored 2 goals that were ruled offside and were caught, I think, seven or eight times offside, whether that be by the VAR or the lineswoman, belatedly.
Yeah, look, I just think before we go into that, touching on some of the stats, I don't think you're right. Matilda's dominated everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Shots on target, possession, amount of passes, passing accuracy, and yet still possession is no longer king. If we don't do anything with that possession, we're not going to get anywhere. Whereas Italy had fewer shots on target. They had less possession, less passes, and they were still able to make use. And this goes back to what we were talking about. When the time comes, they converted their chances.
Yeah, they won the only stat that mattered, and that was the one on the scoreboard. And look, it happens. That's football, I'm afraid.
In terms of the Matildas' formation, I think that you can't really do anything about that back four. That's our usual back four. I thought that the one selection change that I would make is putting Elise Kelly-Knight in the starting 11. I just think that she is a better defensive midfielder. I think that she's more clinical and she's just more aware of her duties. And I think that that was probably one of the biggest mistakes. I don't know if it's because Elise has an injury cloud over her and she wasn't fit to start. That remains to be seen. But I think that Elise Kelly-Knight definitely needs to come into the folds in this next game.
And I think she will. We know that she missed the Netherlands game. She missed a number of games for Melbourne City this year due to injury and all sorts of things. I agree with you. I think she's a fantastic defensive midfielder. The Matildas do look so much better with her in the side. She sits so well in front of that back four and makes it her own. The mistake that led to the first goal was very uncharacteristic.
It's just a bit of a heavy touch.
Yeah, it's one that you'd never really see from the Matildas. And I think you can almost forgive that, given how well they've defended and given that the goals they concede are really from those kind of errors. And you can also say that the second goal came about from a foul that probably shouldn't have been given. So, again, going back to the criticism that the Matildas received, I think both goals could have easily been avoided. And that's at least a benefit for Ante Milicic and his players, that they know that a silly error and a set piece, poor defending, that's something that they can, I think, really work on and make sure never happens again.
Well, hopefully not. Mm. Because, again, as I said, in the game against the Netherlands, conceding two goals from set pieces, conceding another goal from a set piece against Italy, is this trend going to repeat itself over and over and over again? Or are they going to learn that, you know, they just need to be marking their players a lot tighter? Okay, in fairness, Sam Kerr couldn't really do much more than what we saw on the replays.
Yeah, she stretched every part of her body. She just couldn't quite get there.
And Lydia Williams, you know, beaten near post. No goalkeeper wants to be beaten near post. I think it was just really unfortunate, but it needs to be better.
It's surprising because the Matildas are actually pretty good at attacking set pieces. In the air, we're very rarely beaten when we're attacking and from corners and set pieces. So it's surprising that it doesn't quite go the other way. Louise, we did hear from the Matildas head coach, Ante Milicic, post-game, and this is what he had to say following the loss.
Ante, commiserations, absolute heartbreak after a strong performance, but just couldn't do it in the end.
Oh, I wouldn't say a strong performance. I thought we were decent, but we weren't at our best. And in the end, to concede that late from a set piece is very disappointing.
So what positives can you actually take for the next match?
Oh, well, you know, we really need to have a good look at it, have an analysis, look at the way we defend it again. But, you know, we've got 3 days now to regroup and look forward to the Brazil game.
You did create a chance, so maybe improving the finishing could also help you against Brazil?
Yeah, of course, always. But we've got to look at both ends of the field. Yeah, we create enough chances to score a few more. But in the end, defensively, I thought we gave away too many chances. And it's, again, another area that we're going to have to address.
With thanks to Optus Sport, that's the Matildas head coach, Ante Milicic. Now, another thing that was a big talking point was the fact that Milicic supposedly didn't make the right substitutes. What do you think about this?
He brought on Elise Kelly-Knight, Lisa Devanna and
Katrina Gorry.
Well, I thought Lisa Devanna had to come on.
Yeah.
We spoke about this last week. We spoke about this all last week. She is what Tim Cahill was in 2018. I think that's a fair thing to say. I thought she came on and made an impact straight away. She caused a lot of trouble and problems for the Italians in that attacking third. She wasn't able to be rewarded with the goals. She got booked and perhaps maybe should have received the second yellow card. But I thought her coming on was the right one at that time of need. And look, maybe next game, Emily Gilnick, who's done so well for the Melbourne Victory, she could also be an option too. So you never know. I'm not sure whether it was right or fair to criticise the substitutes. I thought he made the right moves, given that Australia had to go for the game, as well as also make sure that they didn't concede another, because Italy did look very dangerous when they were attacking, didn't they?
Oh, they did. Yeah, they looked very, very dangerous. And I agree with you. I don't think that the substitutes can be criticised. I think that he brought on who was needed. They needed a bit of experience, and that's why he brought on Lisa Devanoz. I think that in the next game, as I said, the one change I would make is Elise Kellen-Knight.
If
I would bring
fit,
her on.
Absolutely.
If she's
and
fit
she did
and
look
start
quite
her.
Good when she came on the last 20 minutes. I think it can just come down to maybe Ante Milicic perhaps being outcoached in the second half. Remember, this was his first competitive match as a head coach.
What did you make of Chloe Legazzo? Would you also bring her off maybe for Katrina Gori or another player?
Well, she's a great player. They're all great players. So I think Ante Milicic will have a look at the squad and see what worked and what didn't work. And he's got plenty of players there to work with. So, Katrina Gori and Chloe Legazzo are two very good players. I'm sure either one can do a job if called upon. And do you think he'll make many changes to the squad? I think Elise Kellen-Knight might be one that he would look to make, but do you see any other changes being made?
Other than the two that I said, no. I think everyone else will stay. Maybe Hayley Raso, but I thought she was pretty lively. She was getting herself into good space down the wing there.
Yeah, well, that first half was very good from the Matildas. From the 20th, I think, to the 45th minute, the Matildas took total control. They were rewarded with the goal that saw them take the lead. And there was that one play down the wing where I think Caitlin Ford did that dummy. And if they had scored that goal, I can't remember who had the header that was saved, but that would have been a contender
Kerr's
for goal
header,
of the tournament.
As in the first 5 minutes?
No, it was later on after we had scored where we had a fantastic move down the wing. And Sam Kerr also had that chance where she had that shot on but decided to pass to her teammate in a better position. You can't come down on her too hard on that. So the Matildas certainly had their chances to win the game, that's for sure. And on another day, they might go in. But I think the way the Italians played in that second half, the way they changed things about, going to a 4-4-2 to really nullify the Matildas. And they did well to keep Sam Kerr out of the game as well, don't forget. That second half, she was non-existent and reverted to her being pushed out wide, and her impact was nullified. So great work by the Italians. They really have to be applauded. And, you know, it's a great time for women's football in Italian. For the first time ever in this most previous season, it was the first time where all Serie A clubs had to have a women's team represent them. So teams like AC Milan for the first time had a women's team. And there are 23,000 registered female participants in Italy, and we'd love to see that increase. And we hope that would increase following the success of the women's team, because as we've predicted after this game, and they've got a good game against Jamaica coming up, they could well and truly make it to the next round of this World Cup.
Athos, I think we will leave it there with our Matildas talk. And when we come back, we'll look at some of the other Women's World Cup games.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
What are we calling this? The France review show?
Let's talk France, I think.
Let's talk France.
To keep it consistent with our Let's Talk Russia show during the Men's World Cup. No, Evenings on FNR is what this is. And you can, of course, get involved at any time. 9944 9999. Put a 03 if you're outside Victoria. +61 if you happen to be in France and want to talk about the Matildas or any of the other results. You can also drop us a line on Facebook, which is what Ivan has done. And he said, as much as Carpenter is my favourite Matilda, she got caught out too many times. The defensive line was just too high. That's what we spoke about earlier today. Matildas, you could say it worked. They caught Italy offside a number of times. And I think had the lineswoman flagged a bit earlier, we wouldn't have mightn't have had this debate about the line being too high. We know that Heather Garriock, a former Matilda, was quite vocal post-game about the high line. And her herself, she's the coach of Canberra United, and a former Matilda herself, and she gave a really good insight, I thought, into how the Matildas probably let themselves down defensively.
It's disastrous. I'm so upset. More for the fact of the style in which we played the second half, and we touched on it at the start of the game. This high line is absolutely ridiculous. If you think, as a coach, you can come in and change your philosophy and change the style within five matches, we have just been crucified, not once, but twice. And we so many times they were offside that we could have been scored against more than that. And we've got a 15-ranked side and we're ranked 6th in the world and they've just beaten us. And if we had a better side playing against us tonight, it would have been more than 5. I'm so disappointed. I'm more disappointed in his subs as well. You brought on, you've changed things. We're doing so well in the second a lot of the first half.
Former Matilda and Canberra United head coach Heather Garriock there with thanks to Optus Sports for that bit of audio. I'd say if Italy were offside and called rightly so, then the high line worked. But it is a high risk, high reward, regardless of who you're playing. And whether Milicic will try that against the better sides, that remains to be seen. But it certainly worked to some degree last night, but it did look a bit shaky given how threatening Italy did look when they broke through.
Mm. And it happened on a number of occasions, but not only playing out from the back, but also when defending set pieces. Italy was able to get in behind the back four still. So it's not just the high line, it's defence as a whole.
Yeah, it's risky no matter which team it is or which team is trying to use it, because the coach has to have the faith and trust that all four defenders and the midfielders and whoever are on the same page. Now, I'm sure they all are, and if you want to use this, you have to make sure that everyone is. So whether they use it in the next game, Ante Milicic and all the players back this, they're not going to change just after one loss. That appears to be the message out of the Matildas camp. So, look, I'm pleased to see that he's remaining loyal and he won't adopt too many knee-jerk reactions after just one loss.
And I think that there's a school of thought and a philosophy that defending can happen anywhere on the pitch, and I'm a firm believer of that. And I think that as soon as the Matildas lose the ball, you have to try and win it back as quickly as you can.
Oh, absolutely. The defending happens in the attacking part of the field too. The ability to apply that pressure and keep the ball in your attacking half and in your attacking box is something that is very important.
That's why I think having Elise Kellen-Knight there in midfield, it just helps between, you know, that last line of defence. She helps clean up if the attackers, you know, don't catch the defenders. She helps clean up in the midfield before it gets to that last line of defence.
And she also matches up really well with Tamek Yalup, given both of them
You're
play
right.
for Melbourne
they do play
City
very
too.
Well.
So those two, when they're on, they're two of the best midfield partnerships in the world. So if those two can get on the park together and are fully fit, then Australia has a really good midfield there. They do face a very tough task in the next game. One that against Brazil, the old rivals, who we haven't lost to since the Olympics. It's do or die this game. And one player who I know will be certainly up to it, and Ivan mentioned her, is Ellie Carpenter. And she, as much as many were very critical of the Matildas, she received a lot of praise for her performance at her first World Cup.
Yeah, she did. She looked very experienced, didn't she?
Well, given she was the youngest, it's almost ironic. She looked the most comfortable out of them all there. It's only natural that a lot of the Matildas would be nervous, regardless of how many World Cups you've been at. You are going in as one of the favourites, so there are going to be some nerves. And I thought she handled herself beautifully. She started the play, she was very exciting, confident on the ball, and that's what we want to see from the Matildas.
Yeah, exactly. And as you say, their next game is against Brazil, and you'd like to say that Brazil will certainly be geared up for that game, given the Matildas have had the wood on them over the past couple of years. But in the other Group C clash, Brazil did defeat Jamaica 3-0.
It's a good header and it's in. Cristiano for Brazil. Out of almost nothing, they take the lead.
Little back heel into Leticia Santos. Debinha on the turn. The whistle has gone and a penalty has been awarded. Well, let's have a look. It's handball. It's a penalty. And it's saved. Debinha. And still, nicely done, Andressa, tap in is it?
looked like it crossed the line. Goal is given. It's Cristiano looking for a hat-trick. Oh, has it crossed the line? It has. It's a hat-trick for Cristiano.
Well, thanks to Optus Sport, yes, Brazil's striker Cristiano scored the first hat-trick of the Women's World Cup and actually became the oldest player in the tournament's history to hit a treble as Brazil beat the debutants Jamaica 3-0 in Group C.
It didn't take long, did it, for the first hat-trick, and it was also a case of no mata, no worries, because Cristiano at 34, as you mentioned, became the oldest to score a hat-trick, and the four-time Copa America winners made light work of Jamaica and certainly solidified their place among the few who could really take this tournament home. And they looked fantastic. Brazil, okay, they didn't come up against world beaters in Jamaica, but they did what they had to, and now they're in a really good position for their next two games.
Yeah, exactly. Top of Group C, heading into the next game against Australia. And you'd have to say that they have quite a lot of squad depth given, you know, they have some of their big names out, including Mata.
Yeah, well, we're not quite sure why Mata was left out of the side, though you'd think she'll feature in Brazil's next two games.
I don't think she'd miss it.
No, she wouldn't miss the chance to face Australia. I think this is a game that Brazil have marked as one that they really want to win, and they're going to be really psyched up and really pumped up for this game, which is Friday morning, 1:30 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. So we were blessed with a great kickoff time for that opening game, not so much the second. You might have to set your alarms or brave and be brave and stay up for that one. But yes, Brazil, all of a sudden that becomes the danger game, and they looked really good. The two of Cristiano's freak goals, the set piece and one of the other ones, were first class. They just bounced over the line as such.
Oh, wasn't the free kick goal just beautiful?
She couldn't have hit that any better. Hit the top of the bar, bounced straight back in, well over the line, of course, as well as her other one, and she did not look out of place there. Brazil now in a great position, goal difference-wise. If winning 3-0 in any tournament really almost books your place into the next round, doesn't it?
And that's what the Matildas are going to have to really, you know, look at in the next game, because if Cristiano is scoring goals from free kicks, then how are you supposed to defend that? They need to be able to, but these are the things that they need to be aware of, which I'm sure they will be once they do their video session with Ante Milicic in the next couple of days.
Yeah, and you'd think the Matildas will put up a bit more of a fight than Jamaica. It was also...
And do you think it also comes back to this whole idea of defending? It seems like we're doing a little bit of a loop here, but if you become a clean defender, then you don't give away as many fouls in dangerous positions, like, you know, potentially on the edge of the area where a really top striker like Cristiano could score a goal.
Well, the Brazilians now know what Cristiano's capable of, and anywhere within 25, 30 yards is her distance, is her range. So they'll be advised that if you're within that area and you've got your shirt pulled or you feel like you're going to be fouled, let it happen, because we've got a really good chance to score. And given, as we mentioned, the Matildas, it appears to be one of their weaknesses, defending from set pieces. I think countries will really look to exploit that. We should also give a shout-out to Fermiga, who played in her seventh World Cup at the ripe old age of 41. Unbelievable.
Seventh.
Yeah, one of the Canadian captain, who we'll touch on a bit later, she's been playing international football since the year 2000, which was the year Ellie Carpenter was born. But yes, Brazil and Jamaica, that was quite a one-sided affair there, and a great game with quality goals.
But still, what a brilliant story for Jamaica to feature at their first ever FIFA Women's World Cup. And speaking of first appearances at this year's tournament, Scotland were edged by England 2-1.
Kirby. The referee has just held things up here for a handball. And indeed, that struck the arm, and the arm's away from the body. England penalty. Lee Alexander stands in her way. No problems. Top corner. England lead. England keeping the pressure on as we approach the final few moments of the first half. Still they can't get the ball clear, Scotland. There's a chance, Adam White! Curled into the net beyond Alexander. And once again, Scotland pay the price for failing to clear. Given away again by Horton this time. Evans still going. Chance for Emsley. It's Emsley! It's in the top corner and Scotland have a goal back. England switched off for a second and Scotland have taken full advantage.
With thanks to Optus Sport. Yes, isn't that just priceless? Emsley scored Scotland's first ever FIFA Women's World Cup goal. Unfortunately, they couldn't get the 3 points, but they will certainly take a lot of heart from their second half.
And I know as Australians, we know all about honourable losses. And I'd say, look, I hate to use the term, but this is an effort to be proud of by the Scots. The last time they met England was in 2017 at the European Championships, and they were smacked 6-0. So to really push the Lionesses all the way is a remarkable effort. Now, England were in full control. I thought their first half was as good as we'll see. Give it start of the tournament, so there's still a few things to tweak, but they really started like a real house on fire. Got out to a 2-goal lead, had a goal disallowed, which really would have put their game to bed and allowed Scotland back into the game. It's the first time England has won their opening match at a Women's World Cup since 1995, and it was Karen Carney's 141st appearance, which puts her second on the all-time list for the Lionesses.
And you can see it's a reflection on how far women's football in England has come.
That it has, and it was also Phil Neville's first World Cup as a player or a manager, and he said that despite getting the win, England still has a lot to improve on, and they're sitting pretty on top of their group at the moment, so that's a position that they'll really want to take and move into the next round with. But yeah, they've got a fantastic squad. Nikita Paris from Lyon, she scored the penalty. Ellen White then scored the second one and wrapped up the win. So they've got a great team there. They're one of the favourites, as they are for most tournaments. But this time there's a different feel about England, and they're certainly a team to watch. But as the Scots showed, they're not unbeatable, England. They turned off for a bit in the second half and allowed Scotland to get back into the game. So that'll be one of the areas that Phil Neville will want to improve on as they play their next two games.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you touch on their group. Group D, they are top of, while Argentina are yet to play their opening game, which is coming up tonight against Japan.
That's a really intriguing game. We know a bit about Argentina. We saw them here in Australia at the start of the year. Of course, Japan have won the most recent Asia Cup. So that's a really good, very intriguing contest there. Elsewhere in Group E, Canada take on Cameroon. And as we mentioned, their captain for Canada, Christine Sinclair, is one of their most important players, despite turning 36 in 2 days' time. She has scored 181 goals in 282 matches for a national side. We thought Alex Morgan's record was impressive. She made her international debut at 16 in the year 2000, which was the year Ellie Carpenter was born, and well before Mary Fowler was born too. So there you go, a nice little fun fact to kick off your Monday night.
Some incredible stats there. I mean, 281 appearances and 181 goals. That is just remarkable, and well done to her. I think many Canadians will be watching that game quite eagerly.
Absolutely, and she still is one of their most important players. She's the captain for a reason, and they've got a great chance to kick off their World Cup campaign in fine fashion as Group E gets underway tonight. And, of course, Group E has Canada, Cameroon, the Netherlands and New Zealand. And we saw what the Netherlands did to Australia. They're playing our neighbours New Zealand very shortly. Do you give the Kiwis any hope?
No, because I think the Netherlands are just too strong.
Come on.
I want to say yes because, you know, they're our friends across the Tasman. But I think the Netherlands, as I said before we started our Women's World Cup coverage, I think the Netherlands will be in the top four. That's my prediction.
Yeah, it's a fair statement. I think they were in my top four as well when we spoke last Monday, or last Thursday actually. So New Zealand has a tough task. And really, in that group, you'd probably have the Netherlands on top, and then it's anyone's guess as to who finishes second. As we also know, four third-ranked sides will progress into the next round too. So there'll be plenty of opportunities for sides to progress despite not finishing in the top two. We'd love to hear your thoughts on these upcoming games. If you're an English fan, let us know. 9944 9999 03 if you're outside Victoria. At FNR_radio is our Twitter. And or you can just drop us a line on the Facebook Live.
Yes, and then rounding out the Women's World Cup, don't fret, United States fans, because the US will be kicking off their Women's World Cup campaign on Wednesday morning against Thailand. And also in the same group is Chile and Sweden, who will be in action at the same time as well. So that is pretty much all of the countries at the Women's World Cup. And then we are on to match day two, which will be even more intriguing. Looking at some of these clashes, and it's fascinating. Germany are taking on Spain, Nigeria, South Korea, France and Norway.
It's very funny, well, maybe not funny, but very interesting how quickly things can shift in a World Cup. Because before tournaments, any tournament, there's the process and the way everyone thinks it's going to go. And then match day one, there's a small spanner in the work and everyone goes, okay, maybe this can still happen. And then by match day two or three, the whole tournament's been turned on its head and the favourites haven't won a game and there's a massive underdog. So I have no doubt something like that will happen in this World Cup. We have only had, what, four or five matches and there's been one upset. Everything else has sort of gone to plan. Could you imagine if the USA lose or something like that, or New Zealand do the Netherlands over? That would really turn the tournament on its head and give countries like Thailand and Italy and those kind of nations a bit of hope that they can do well in this World Cup.
Yeah, of course. And I have no doubt that there will be some surprises over the next coming weeks. But Athos, speaking of favourites, the favourites didn't actually win this morning in the inaugural Nations League final. Unfortunately, or fortunately, mm-hmm. Portugal claimed their second trophy in 3 years by beating the Netherlands.
Bernardo Silva. And now, the first ever winners of the UEFA Nations League, Portugal.
With thanks to Optusport for that audio, because while there was Women's World Cup action, there was also UEFA Nations League action, and Portugal secured their first and the inaugural Nations League trophy after a 1-0 victory over the Netherlands.
Yeah, the second trophy in 3 years, and Fernando Santos adds that to the list. As we know, they won the Euros back in 2016 in France, and they've maybe not rectified, but they've won this on home soil, unlike 2004. But they've got another trophy now. And while the Nations League, it's still in its infancy and not many people take it too seriously, it's I think it's a great tournament. I think it shows off European football and it gives meaning to some of these other games. It's more meaningful matches and great incentive with qualification for the Euros. It gives the English a chance to get excited and start, you know, chanting it's coming home. But no, it was an interesting game, the Netherlands and Portugal. Ronaldo didn't dominate as many thought he would or as he did against the Swiss. He was well held by the defensive partnership of Van Dijk and De Ligt. And after the game, the Optusport's cameras and coverage caught Ronaldo having a chat to De Ligt and maybe whispering, asking him to come join Juventus, given that he hasn't quite decided where he's going to play next season. And De Ligt responded saying that he was a bit surprised and didn't quite understand it at first, but just laughed it off because, you know, it's not every day that you get a personal request by the great Ronaldo to come and join him at his club.
No, and it just shows the quality of Matthias De Ligt that, you know, Ronaldo wants to bring him to Juventus to be part of that machine that is, you know, always growing. But the candidates to sign De Ligt at the moment are Barcelona, Juventus and PSG.
Do you say no to either of those clubs?
I understand that the Manchester United bid has been rejected, But it just depends which league and which club he wants to go to. Where does he see himself fitting in? Is it more short term? Is it long term? Could he go to Ligue 1, play for PSG? Could he go to Juventus for a season and then maybe move on to, as we've spoken about, dreamland being Barcelona, because we know that is where he would ideally like to end up. I think that potentially he might maybe go to Juventus or PSG, maybe do a springboard before he goes to Barcelona.
Yeah, well, Barcelona is the pinnacle of any footballer's career, as is Real Madrid. That's about as high as you can get. Really, you can't get much better than Barcelona. Interested to see that Liverpool isn't in the equation, given how well he works with Virgil van Dijk. And van Dijk can almost provide that bit of mentorship to him. And
Liverpool were in the conversation. I don't know where they are at the moment, but Jurgen Klopp wanted to sign De Ligt to have that Netherlands partnership in defence.
Given how young De Ligt is as well, I'd think that for his own good and to, for him to enhance his career, working alongside someone like Van Dijk, not just the three times a year that you play for your national team, but every week, I think that could be fantastic. Because as we know, wherever he goes, he's going to get so much attention. He will come in as a big-name recruit. Okay, and yes, Juventus and PSG and Barcelona have great defenders that will help him out too, but I feel at Liverpool he'll be almost protected given that Van Dijk will be there and to really help him out, and I think that could be really beneficial. So wherever he goes, I'm sure he'll excel. But for the Dutch, though, they weren't able to get the win in the end, and they have now lost four of their last five finals in major international tournaments. That is not a statistic you would want to hear if you are from the Netherlands.
When do you think they'll be able to break that?
Well, I've got the team. They've certainly got the team, and they've got a major point to prove should they qualify for the upcoming Euros. They didn't qualify for the last Euros or the last World Cup. So them, like Italy, who have done very well to not drop a game in qualifiers so far, they've got they come into these qualifiers almost to make a big statement, which I feel that would have been the message prior to this game. Ronald Koeman would have gone in and said, you know, listen, this is our chance to make a statement on the global stage, to almost get an advantage heading into the Euros. Unfortunately for them, they weren't able to get the job done. Portugal, meanwhile, they almost put themselves in a really good position to defend their European crown. They weren't expected to win the last Euros, given that they qualified from third in their group, and they didn't convince many people when they won it. But I think now they're certainly shaping up as one of the favourites to win the Euros a year out from the tournament. With their midfielder, Bruno Fernandes, is also linked to a move to Manchester United in the range of £68 to £70 million. And we also know that Bernardo Silva continues to do what he does. So they've got a really good team, especially in midfield there, Portugal.
Yes, they do. And Portugal are actually the first European nation to host and win a major final of a major competition since France beat Brazil 3-0 in the final of the 1998 World Cup. While the Netherlands fielded the same starting 11 in consecutive games for the first time since October 2014. Hopefully they can stick with this squad, because there is a lot of quality. We know that even you touch on Manchester United. Van de Beek actually wants a move to Manchester United or Tottenham Hotspur, says one of the Dutch reporters over there. So it'll be interesting to see where some of these Dutch players end up in this summer transfer window.
Yeah, they've got an abundance of quality. And if Ajax can keep producing players like they did this time, or they've always produced gun players, but this year they were able to really show what they're capable of, given how far they went in the Champions League. And that's what they're known for there. The Academy of Football, they've produced so many great players, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more to come.
And Athos, we might take a quick break before we come back and chat about the Socceroos friendly on Friday night.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Evenings on FNR, Louise Taffer with Athos Syrianos, and joining us for this final 7 minutes is Josh Parrish. Josh, good evening to you.
Good evening to both of you.
It is a pleasure to have you in the studio with us, because in this final couple of minutes before we round out the show, we're going to talk the Socceroos, because we can't forget that they were two in action on Friday night, an international friendly against South Korea. They were edged 1-0, but there were some questionable decisions made with the Socceroos starting 11. Firstly, your thoughts on the team that Graham Arnold fielded?
I have no problem with him picking an experimental lineup. I mean, we had Ryan Walters from K-League United on Friday, and he was bemoaning the fact that Paolo Bento hadn't done the same thing. He hadn't given, you know, unproven players an opportunity in a friendly that, you know, ultimately doesn't mean much. So I had no problem with him picking an experimental squad. I had some question marks over a few of the selections in the 23, but then the starting team he put out there, and I think you made the observation on Twitter, Louise, probably a better team made up of the bench players than of the starting 11. He picked six of his former players that he's had at his old clubs. And I think the lack of, you know, creativity from Graham Arnold in his coaching, you know, that pretty much sums it up. The Socceroos still had, regardless of the weakened side, you know, the same systemic problems as they've had under him in his entire reign, struggling to create chances. You know, the wingers were operating almost exclusively in isolation. The striker was almost not involved except, you know, in transition. So I was really disappointed by the makeup of the midfield. Terry Antonis didn't get a run. Adam Taggart, even though he's playing in, you know, the country in which he's dominating the domestic league and scoring goals left, right and centre, he was benched for Mitch Duke, who only came into the squad as an injury replacement player. So I had a very I was very disappointed with the starting 11. I think a better career side, they were extremely disappointing considering the squad they had out there. A better career side would have put the team away 3 or 4 nil. But you know, because Korea was disappointing, because Australia featured a weakened 11, it's almost a ready made excuse. And you know, it was being spun in post match as exceeding expectations, when Graham Arnold had only lowered them by picking the, you know, abhorrent team that he did.
Mm.
Four debutants for the Socceroos, including a number of his former players. I thought of the positives to come out there. Brandon O'Neill held his own. Mustafa Amini did okay. Even Mitchell Duke, I mean, Adam Taggart probably should have started, but Mitchell Duke, he had the best chance for Australia, didn't he, hitting the post from that set piece.
I think Adam Taggart buries that. I think that's his bread and butter. He scored that near post header so many times for Brisbane Roar last season. So, you know, I mean, Mitchell Duke did fine. He was okay, but, you know, I really think Adam Taggart, that was his opportunity to show what he's all about. Playing in Korea, it was a very short trip for him, and I want him to be the Socceroos' number nine for the next few years going forward. But if he doesn't get a starting opportunity in a friendly to, you know, prove his worth and cement his place, he's never going to get a chance.
I was really shocked to not see him in the starting 11. For those who don't know, this was the starting 11 Graham Arnold fielded against Korea Republic. He had Andrew Redmayne in goal. The back four included of Aziz Baich, Matt Yerman, Bailey Wright and Ryan Grant. He had in the midfield Amini, Jago and O'Neill. And up front, the three consisted of Craig Goodwin, Mitchell Duke and Awa Mabil. And on the bench, he had the likes of Taggart, Ryan Williams, Dimi Petrados, Thomas Deng, Sporanovic, Williams, Smith, Lawrence Thomas, Terry Antonis, Brandon Borrello, who made a substitute appearance, and Harry Suter, who we didn't see either. But, yeah, it was a weird and wacky starting 11 he put out.
If there was a series of friendlies, if there were... Because generally in the international window, you play two or three friendlies, and this just appears to be the one-off. And that's why it's all the more surprising he didn't field... Okay, it was never going to be Australia's best team, but at least players who, you know, are deserving of a spot. And... If, as I said, if there were two or three games, okay, maybe you can experiment and throw a few different players in there. But yeah, it was surprising he didn't field the likes of Taggart, who's had, he's been better or in form for a lot longer than Mitchell Duke. Mitchell Duke came here in January and he did play well for the Wanderers, but Adam Taggart, I feel, had been a lot better for a longer period of time. So I was very upset, very bemused to see why he didn't get a start. And same with Terry Antonis. I thought this was going to be the chance that he was going to be rewarded with an opportunity, and it just didn't seem to come in, did it?
As for the positives, I think Ryan Williams looked pretty sharp off the bench. Hard to tell in that context where he only got a short cameo, only a few touches, and you know it's in a stretch game where the players are already tired, so maybe he looks better. But I thought he looked sharp. I thought he looked a player, and he's not someone I've watched a lot, given he plays for Rotherham, whose games are not often televised in Australia. Brandon O'Neill garnered a lot of praise. I wasn't as impressed as a lot of onlookers. I felt he does the things that he does well. He did well. He set piece delivery and making tackles in midfield. That's his bread and butter. Getting on the ball in threatening areas when the opponent is set up defensively and actually, you know, probing with those passes, not so much. So I think he's He's limited in that respect. Ryan Grant had another great game. Mm. I think Vince Rigari referred to him on Twitter as the Bush Doof Cafu.
Is he almost a lock in Australia's best team?
I think he is, especially with Arnold in charge, who knows him and loves him. And I think Ryan Grant, you know, again, played very well. He's just all physicality up and down the flank, and that's what I want from a fullback. But the wingers got a lot of criticism, Mabil and Goodwin, and I thought that was a little bit unfair because they had no support. They were always going 1-on-1, 2v1 with the fullback and the midfielders, not getting a lot of support in those areas. So, again, they were isolated, just like the forwards were. The forward was isolated, and again, that's another systemic problem in this team that, you know, the wingers are expected to just create things off their own back rather than in pattern play. And it really reduces your options in the attacking third. So I think the same systemic issues, regardless of the personnel, are still there for the Socceroos, regardless of the weekend 11, regardless of the scoreline not being as bad as we all thought. You know, I don't think that makes it a success.
So more work for Graham Arnold to do. And as you say, Athos, interesting that there aren't a series of international friendlies scheduled for the Socceroos, but we will leave it there because we've run out of time. Thank you for joining me here in the studio, boys.
No worries.
And if you miss any of the show, head to FNR's website or SoundCloud. And until then, tune in tomorrow at the same time. Bye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.